my first time really running a team. I probably was at B&G or something. A light went on for me bright and clear. You're always running an all-volunteer army. You just don't know it because they can vote with their feet and just walk right out the door if they don't feel inspired and appreciated and feel like they're making a difference. I'd say the lesson came over time, but it took me 10 years to learn that lesson, that you're always running an all-volunteer army.
Great companies are all about the people. Good people become great leaders, mentors for work and life.
Welcome to Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. I'm Andrew Tarvin, humor engineer.
And I'm Roman Segel, recovering marketer. Andrew and I both got our start at P&G, the Procter & Gamble company, where we both had the opportunity to work with some amazing people. And as you may know, many leaders across industries got their start at P&G. In this series, through conversations with fellow P&G alums, we hope to go deeper with the leaders you already know but want to know more about, how they got their start, how they make it work, and what keeps them going.
It's kind of like bringing a microphone to a cup of coffee, or in my case, hot chocolate. On today's episode, we're going to hear from a lot of people.
Okay, define a lot.
Well, there's me and you, which is two, plus we have Chip, Gina, Lisa, Jill. There's a lot.
That's a lot of voices on one podcast. What's the deal, dude?
Well, I'll give you a hint. They all have something in common, every voice you're going to hear today.
I'm guessing, based on the name of the podcast, that they all spent some time at P&G.
And specifically that they've been on this podcast, because this is a greatest hits episode.
Wait a minute. Didn't we do one of those last week already?
We did, but over the past year, we've had some incredible conversations with some amazing leaders, and there was just way too much wisdom to cram into one episode.
I guess one could say that there have been a lot of learnings from a lot of leaders.
Ooh, what a great name that could become, you know, but they were also different types of leaders too.
Yeah, we've talked to some of the biggest names in P&G history, along with rising stars at some of the biggest brands.
And we've chatted with retired industry greats, along with some of the industry's most senior leaders.
So, Drew, who are we talking to today?
Well, for this episode, we're going to focus on CEOs at some pretty big companies you've heard of, and even a few that you probably will be hearing about soon. These are leaders who are currently in the top seat at some really great businesses. And because they're passionate about helping the next generation of leaders, they took a little bit of time to share what it took for them to get to where they are and what they've learned since.
Yeah, you know, it was really great to hear from current leaders during a really challenging year, especially because they were able to shed light on the stories behind their purpose, values, and principles, the things they leverage every day at the helm of some really amazing companies like Levi's, Signet Jewelers, Schnong Beverages, and even the Books.
And don't forget Clorox, Newell Foods, Logitech, and even the National Women's Soccer League.
This is such an amazing list of companies and CEOs across industry. So who's up first, Drew?
First up, we're going to be hearing from Chip Berg, CEO of Levi's Strauss & Company.
Chip is another great leader who just embodies so many of P&G's values and principles. While this wasn't the first conversation we aired on this podcast, Chip was the first person I actually got to have a talk with for the podcast. I'd actually seen him speak a few times, and hearing his perspective on choosing the harder right over the easier wrong really hit home for me. It was really great to just also understand how he made his choice for his big career jump, which ultimately led him to Levi's.
I got to a point where, what was my career all about? What's my legacy going to be? I've got a wake of people who have worked for me who are CEOs around the world. And I feel great about that. So that's clearly part of my legacy. I've trained and groomed and developed a lot of people who've gone on to be very, very successful. But from a business standpoint, I wanted something where I could really leave my mark. And the reality was, at Procter, I was running the second most profitable business at the company. I probably wasn't going to be CEO. I had been in the job for 6 years. They probably would have let me do it for another couple of years, but I was 53 years old. And it's like, I'm not ready to retire. I've got a lot left in me. And so it was a combination of the brand and the circumstances and the opportunity to leave a legacy, to make a mark. This is one of America's oldest companies. Procter's now been around for almost 190 years. Levi Strauss has been around for 167 years. This was an opportunity to step into a situation that the company was in pretty bad shape at the time and make a difference, turn the business around, turn the brand around, and rebuild and make this company amazing again. I talked about it as my noble cause to make this company what it was when I grew up. You know, I like to say, if you went to Woodstock, I was just a tad too young for Woodstock. But if you went to Woodstock 50 years ago, if you weren't naked, you were wearing Levi's.
Yeah. It's an American institution.
It is. It's truly, I like to say, everybody's got a Levi's story. And almost without fail, everybody has a Levi's story. That's the kind of brand it was. So what other brand? I was getting a lot of headhunter calls. There was nothing that interested me that I was, and CEO calls. But they were either for B or C brands or companies or in locations that I had no interest living in. And I was just patient and I waited for the right thing to come along. I remember exactly where I was when I got the headhunter calls. I was in a hotel in Beijing. I can actually describe what the carpet looked like because I was looking at the carpet as this headhunter said to me, I think I've got something you might be really interested in. And, you know, I kind of rolled my eyes and the little bubble over my head was, yeah, I've heard that before. And she said, what do you think about Levi's? And the words out of my mouth were, oh, wow. And that says it all. I mean, and it's been incredible since I joined. And we've turned the company around, built an amazing team, great talent throughout the organization. We took the company public. It's really been an incredible ride.
What stands out to me most about that story that he shared was how intentional he is about leaving a legacy. I'm curious, Roman, are you that deliberate in terms of how you think about what's to come next?
You know, I think the focus really is about doing great work and leaving a mark with it. And that's something Chip talked a lot about. You know, he did talk about having that long-term goal and that legacy, but he also talked about how he's willing to let it evolve because life's going to throw a lot of curveballs at you. And, you know, you have to bring yourself, your whole self to both work and life. And that's something Chip and I spoke a lot about.
It's easy to come up with a picture that my life was entirely skewed to business and to P&G. And I always try to maintain balance in my life. And that's a big part of what I try to coach and pass on to the people that I mentor is work is only, you got to think about your whole self. And you're going to be most productive at work if you can bring your whole self to work and be at your best every single day. And that does mean you've got to maintain your health. You've got to be healthy. You've got to be well. You've got to get enough sleep. You've got to be happy at home. And you're inevitably going to face shocks to the system throughout your life. Your parents are going to die. Your spouse's parents might die. Your kids might go through a tough time in their teenage years. I mean, there are all kinds of issues that you're going to have to face. And you have to be prepared for that yourself. So I always tell people to have a long-term goal. Think about where you want to be. What do you want to be when you grow up? That kind of question. And be willing to change it over time too. You know, you don't have to say, I want to be a CEO when you're 25 years old. And to be honest, I didn't decide I wanted to be a CEO until I was about 50.
Again, this concept of bringing your whole self to work is a really powerful one that we heard from a lot of our leaders. And it's about putting everything in perspective because as Chip said, there's going to be shocks to your system throughout. And I think if this year has taught us anything, life is going to throw some curveballs. And so being able to balance your perspective is really, really important.
It's also an aspect of the big picture of authenticity, but then also the small details. And that's something that I appreciated about another great leader that we learned from was Jenna Drozo, CEO of Signet Jewelers, who had won in her entire conversation this focus on not just the big picture items, but also the small details that ultimately led to big results. And one of those big results that she actually talked about was diversity, specifically as a business strategy.
One of the most powerful things I have learned in my career is that diversity is a business strategy. It's not an HR program. It's not a nice to have. It is the only way that teams can see and think 360 degrees. It's by getting diverse viewpoints in the room. And that's definitely something that I began learning at P&G and have carried through and have continued to learn about during my career. And I think it's a very powerful moment that we're in as a country where we need to also not sugarcoat or just lump into a diversity message what's going on with racial inequality. We need as leaders to be thinking about how do we get more Black leaders into our senior ranks of companies to bring forward a different point of view. So I guess I would say I start with this fundamental belief that women and men, Black and white, young and old, all of us are bringing different perspectives, not only based on our education and our upbringing, but truly based on our life experience living in our skin. And so as I came into Signet, it was very important to me to try to start to build a more diverse company here. And I have great leaders on my leadership team. And yes, a number of them are women. And I think we all are bringing a different perspective into this organization, which is great.
What Jenna's conversation reminded me a little bit of is there's this old management adage that I thought was always really funny to me. If two people think exactly the same, one of them is unnecessary, right? And that just speaks to the fact that this isn't just an HR thing. As she mentioned, it's smart business to have a diverse pool of thought.
It's this idea of diversity is not just about the color of your skin, your gender, your age, but it's about thought and experience. And so surrounding yourself with people with lots of different perspective. And that's something she also did as she moved from role to role, moving from CPG to retail.
I had zero idea when I came onto the Signet board that it would ever be anything more than being a board director. But I came on because I thought it would help me do better in my role at P&G to see things from a retailer's perspective, truly. And I felt like I could give something, which was my true global marketing, branding, and business leadership expertise. So there's always, I think, at least for me, when I choose experiences, what can I give? And then what can I get from that experience that will help me be a better leader as well? So that's why I came onto the Signet board. I think in general, then thinking about experiences, I've never found that I've had a lot of luck trying to take too much control over my career path, to be honest. It's been better for me to make the small decisions and not try to forecast the big decisions. So I came onto Signet for those reasons that I said, and then the big thing ends up happening. And I found that time and again is that when I trust my mentors, when I trust my instinct about something, and I think, well, this makes sense for now, that's the better way to manage my career than to ever try to think too big or too far out. Things just change too much.
And what I find interesting, and this I think is what's great about this podcast, is from Chip, we just heard about that idea of think about the long-term goal. And then what Jen is saying here is she's always focused more on executing and doing things, the small details. And I love that diversity, right? Talking about diversity of opinion from even some of the leaders that we hear from. And that's what I think is great for people to take away, is they might resonate more with one person than what they resonate with what someone else has said.
Another really important piece of diversity, though, is diversity of industry, because it's not just about working in CPG or retail. There's a lot of other industries that some of our leaders have gone and worked at.
Absolutely. And it brings us to our next leader, which is Lisa Baird, who is the commissioner of the National Women's Soccer League. Talk about diversity from the CPG industry. And her conversation was fantastic because she talked a lot about creative problem solving, especially when certain problems hadn't ever really existed before.
The first week of March, we were in New York and you were starting to see what was happening, but we weren't really grasping the enormity of it. No one. What was interesting, I got a call from a reporter. It was March 10th, my first day in Chicago. March 11th, I got a call from a reporter of New York Times, who I knew. And she's like, hey, this is going, what's your comment? And I was like, what? Anyway, what was so amazing to me about March 12th, and this will be forever a day that I'll remember, is on March 11th that night, the NBA shut down because one of the Utah Jazz players tested positive. So they had it right there on the court. But Adam made the immediate decision to shut down. In 24 hours, the entire sports industry shut down. I don't think any other industry did that. I think there was this realization in the sports industry that profoundly everything shifted overnight, everybody. So I can't say I was first, but watching that happen, I just said, look, we got to shut down and delay until we have a sense. The apprehensive part of it for me was reaching out, and I reached out to everybody for the game plan. there was no game plan. No one had a game plan. And I think that was, if I'm honest, that was anxiety. I'm in a brand new league. I've got 230 plus players, depending on me. I've got 9 new owners. The entire industry has shut down and there's no game plan. And so I will say this, it was much more my IBM thinking than any other sports thinking that got me through those early days and gave me my plan, my process on how to get to where we ended up with the Challenge Cup. It was come up with the end-to-end solution. Sit down, we're a tiny little league, and map out every single problem. What's this? What's this? What's this? It was on a piece of paper because I'm now working at home, like everything that I still have. And I literally just wrote them all down in red and say, okay, here's how I'm going to tackle this one. Here's how to tackle this one. And it was a range of thinking. And my team was also very key with me. It was like, okay, what are we going to do for preseason? What's our medical protocol? Let's get doctors together. We developed a medical task force. Then it was how, what's our tournament structure? What's our competition structure? So it was working with people to iterate. And we iterated a lot of ideas. It was weekly owner calls, communication. How's my communication plan going to go with my biggest stakeholders? One of the hardest things I did was when we were early on developing the medical protocols and getting us out there, I did 2 Zoom calls with all our players. The first one was to outline the medical protocols and tell them what we were contemplating with the Challenge Cup. And you're sitting there talking to players in a contact sport, Andrew. We want them to go out, play in a contact sport, do it as safely that we can. But I was very honest with them that we couldn't guarantee no COVID. We could only guarantee that we were going to do everything we needed to do to mitigate risk. Going through our solution with the PA to come up with a great plan for them and for us that we could support to guarantee player compensation through the year and guarantee healthcare benefits and housing. The list went on and on. So that's how the game plan got to be, was end-to-end solution thinking.
Running a sports league in the beginning of a pandemic, can you imagine starting a job and dealing right away with something as crazy as the pandemic and the quarantine? You really do have to rely on past experiences and insight from others, but you also just have to start putting a plan into place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that step into action and say, all right, let's go and let's learn as we go along is actually a hallmark of Lisa's career. She talked a lot about this idea of trying something new and being intentional about trying new things in her career journey, as opposed to going straight to the top in one industry, wanting that diversity of experience, right? So you hear that from Lisa. I think sometimes we, as especially type A people, we sometimes get so focused on what's the fastest way to the top, or get so pigeonholed into one perspective or one route. And Lisa talked about value in trying new things in the long run. Something that's also true of Jill Barreau, the CEO and co-founder of Schnong Beverage Company and on the board of directors of Levi's, who had a similar thought.
One of the things that has benefited me moving from industry to industry is I've always found, first you have to start with the consumer and where the white space is, but a lot of innovation and ideas come from other industries. So one of the benefits that I've found is that I can search and reapply, taking ideas from one industry and applying them to others. While they may not be as innovative in one place, they are very innovative in another industry. I mean, one of the examples I use all the time is in CPG, particularly food, beverage, beauty, the whole notion of sampling is a very common practice. Well, when I went into fashion retail, no one was doing sampling, but we ended up applying that kind of concept really it started with a big consumer insight, which was at Victoria's Secret, as an example. Only half the people that were buying bras were actually buying panties. So we had a decision that we were going to sample our panties. That became one of the huge growth drivers, believe it or not, through many, many years at Victoria's Secret, and actually helped to build a $1 billion business.
Yeah, I just really appreciated her perspective about working at companies both big and small, but also being able to connect the dots of something we might take for granted in one industry and apply it to just some amazing results in another.
right? Like, this is not to overly like talk about this, but this is that benefit of diversity of experience. Or I remember what some people at P&G would refer to as innovation by analogy, that ability to take something that's already been solved in one industry, whether that is in a completely different actual business context or even in nature, right? They talked about biomimicry and other ideas before of learning, hey, this problem's already been solved in this scenario. Can we reapply it here? And I think that's just good business strategy.
Search and reapply. It's just really important. Another thing I loved is how Jill was able to adapt to being an outsider to company by just showing results and getting the work done.
The best way to convince people that you actually have something to contribute is by showing results. And I think when I went to Victoria's Secret as an example, there were a lot of people that had absolutely no idea how someone with a CPG background could actually come in and make a difference. And when I went there in the mid-90s, there were no sub-brands. The marketing department was actually a sign shop. So over time, that marketing department really helped transform what Victoria's Secret became, which was a global powerhouse brand. I mean, we brought database marketing and CRM. We launched products and sub-brands that had never been conceived of before. So we really changed the dynamic there, but that took a lot of time. And it was really about showing the results that could happen before people started to appreciate the different thinking.
You know, we can all talk about playing the game, but all of that's under the assumption that you're doing the work and delivering the results. And that's honestly something we heard from another one of our guests, Alejandro Beflin, who's the CEO of The Books, which is the leading online floral retailer. And he's an alum of not just P&G, but also Amazon.
Yeah, and what he did so well was able to bridge what he learned at P&G to then evolve to how he got to and even grew at Amazon to then ultimately what led to his getting the top job at The Books. That ability to leverage a past experience into something new, I think, is fascinating to learn from.
Yeah, and the continuing thread about the consumer or the customer's boss.
Customer obsession. Amazon lived it in every decision. I made a pretty big mistake my second year there that cost us, I don't know, like $250,000. And I was with one of the executives explaining to him what I was going to do. And he goes, hold on, I think you're thinking about this incorrectly. What I was going to do to minimize the loss. And he goes, if you were to take money out of the picture, don't think about money, just think about what happened. Would you do things differently? And I'm like, of course, if money wasn't out of the picture, here's what I do for the customer. And he's like, well, then that's what you should do, right? And that blew me away. Like, it was so freeing of a thinking that just do the right thing for the customer. Don't caveat it with a bunch of other things. And that's how Amazon thinks a lot. And if there's inefficiencies or things that don't make sense or drags on profit, that's for you to figure out. Don't push all that complexity to the customer. And so it was a very freeing feeling that they were kind of like a step ahead on how to think about customer and customer decisions. And there's a lot of Procter people that have been very successful at Amazon. I'd say half that I took over there. So there was a lot of similarities, and I really, really, really thrived in that environment. They're okay with risk-taking as long as you're buttoned up. They're okay with you pushing the envelope and really thinking about things differently. They're okay with pushing decision-making down so you don't have to be getting things approved all the time. And so that to me was just a great experience.
Something about Alejandro's leadership was just his willingness to admit that he made a mistake, but not minimize the impact of the mistake. And ultimately, the lesson learned was doing right by the customer, which is something I think we would all agree is a pretty valuable learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all had to learn that, you know, consumer is boss. But as a leader in an organization, you learn not only consumer is boss, but also as your people, as being someone to really be supportive of and think about. And that's one of the principles that seem to help Alejandro is this idea of helping your people understand what does it mean by quote unquote work-life balance, whatever you mean by that, and balancing both the needs of the business with the needs of the family.
Work-life balance, I give myself a C on always being there for my family. So not horrible, but I could have done it more often for those moments. And I try to do that much more now. I don't believe in work-life balance. I think it's an extremely personal thing, how you divide that, right? And so to me, what I try to do is make sure that I'm giving everybody flexibility, especially in these times. And sometimes that means what I call leaving loudly. And so I try at times to say like, hey guys, I'm taking the afternoon off, but announce it to my whole leadership team. Instead of trying to hide and just acting like I'm not, no, saying I'm taking the afternoon off, just to make sure they understand it's okay to do these things. It's okay to take time for yourself. It's okay to block your lunch. When my family was still in Germany, I was here for 2 months before my family came here, and I would block my calendar from 11 to 1, which was 8 to 10 their time. And during that time, I would eat lunch while they were eating dinner on Zoom. And we'd talk and we'd try to do kind of like a family dinner. And it was non-apologetic at those 2 hours I'm blocking to keep up with my family. And so I think that those type of things are really important to allow each person to realize what their work-life balance is. To me, I'm okay working long days, but weekends I don't want to work.
Yeah.
Weekends I try as much as possible to shut down. And that's how I mentally recharge. I've had people that I've worked with that want to leave at 5 o'clock every day, but they work on Sunday afternoons to get ready for the week. Do what you need to do. And I think that I've been lucky to have a lot of great bosses that have modeled that behavior of just, it doesn't matter that you work 60 hours or 40 hours, get your stuff done, right? And if you can't get your stuff done, make sure that you're sitting down and with your boss and prioritizing what needs to be done.
I think it's so great in what he talks about is just how important it is to understand that it's different for everyone. I'm personally very productive late into the evening. And so sometimes that's when I send out emails or that's when I do creative work. And it's not to say, oh, I'm always working super late. It's just when I happen to be creative. And I think the big thing that Alejandro references is that you've got to deliver your work plan, right? That's your quote unquote contract with the organization and have to make sure that you're delivering what's against what's expected. And if you can't do that, at least have a conversation to say, hey, I need some help prioritizing some of these ideas.
The next leader we heard from was Chris Malkowski, who's the CEO of Newell Food Brands, which includes brands like Ball, Food Saver, and Rubbermaid. And Chris has got to be one of the most centered executives that I've had the privilege of talking with. She really knows what her priorities are, both at work and at home. And honestly, both of them inform everything she does. And in classic P&G marketing style, she even gave her approach to life a motto.
I was really stressed out one night. My husband was traveling on a business trip and I was getting so stressed, I couldn't go to sleep. And I came up with a motto that has been my motto ever since, and it's really guided me well. And the motto is live, laugh, love, and let go. And what I mean by that is try to live life to its fullest. I think sometimes people hold themselves back because they want to do what they think other people think they should be doing or what they conceive is the right thing in society. Love is very important. You have to love what you do. If you don't, figure out what you love because it makes the journey so much easier. Laugh a lot. The world has its funny twists and turns and you can't be too serious. And then probably the most important part is let go. There were so many women and men that I met along the way who were guilty that they weren't doing this for their child, or they were guilty they didn't bake cookies and they bought ho-hos instead for the school contribution that they had to make for their kids. Don't worry about the little stuff. Your kids are not going to sit there when they're adults and say, oh my gosh, you're the only mother who didn't bake cookies for our Valentine's party. That's not what they're going to remember. My daughter is 29, and probably about 4 years ago, we were talking about the fact that she had a working mother her entire life. And I said something like, I'm sorry if I missed out on things. And she goes, you didn't miss out on anything, Mom, because when you were present, you were present. And I thought, wow, that's such a beautiful thing for my daughter to have grown up and tell me.
Oh, you gotta love a good motto, which I think
good
is
life motto,
right? A good life motto. And for Chris, it was never just a motto though, right? Beyond sharing some deep stories about her personal life and the choices that she made, like spending more time with her kids, She also had to do this type of explaining to recruiters that it wasn't just, hey, get me a good job with a good title, but that this was an important part of her decision-making process.
That kind of centered approach, it was great to hear how she applied it, not just to her personal life, but also doing the right thing by her people at work. And I think we all know the past year has been a crazy one, and how she thought about her personal principles in terms of how she motivated and encouraged her people.
Sadly, today, with all that's been going on with the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota, I was on with our team of African-American professionals in Atlanta, and I was hearing stories about how sometimes they feel there is a norm that they need to live to, and they can't bring them full selves to work. And the only way we're going to get better in the world and better in corporate America is to bring our full self to the workplace. And yes, we may face a little diversity. We may face some bias from other people, but if we stand strong and stand together, we can bring that diversity and that difference and that meaningfulness to the workplace, which will transcend into the brands that we sell.
So another important thing we keep coming back to is the idea of bringing your full self to work. And again, that includes realizing our own biases, but also finding a way to work through it together with our teams to ultimately build a culture that's bigger than any one of us.
And culture is something that Ben Odor, the former chairman and CEO of the Clorox company, talked about in our conversation. One of the things that Ben really stuck out with me and still sticks out with me was this concept of what he called the triumph of mediocrity.
I tell my organization that I want them to make me uncomfortable. I want everybody to make their managers say no every now and then. Because if you always go for something that your manager readily agrees to, then you're likely not bold enough. You're likely going for what I call the triumph of mediocrity. It's the lowest common denominator that everybody can agree to, and that's safe and that's good and allows us to move on. But that's not where the magic is. The magic is in turning a no into a yes. And that starts with someone's ability to walk into your manager's office and come in with a bold idea, live with the no, try to explore what it takes to turn that no into a yes, and then go get the data or the facts or put the creative process in place that turns that no into yes.
Man, the triumph of mediocrity is such a great phrase. I love how he thinks through really focusing on the magic of turning a no into a yes to ultimately drive change.
Yeah, that turning a no into a yes, I've heard it that managers maintain status quo, leaders create what the next normal is. They create kind of that change and expectation. And one of those things that is important to Benno, the magic of turning a no into a yes, but also the magic of doing what you love.
I had really no reason to complain at all, but I've always aspired to have a life that's more than just good. I was looking for inspiration and to find joy again, and I was looking to reinvent myself again. That's something that I quite love to do every few years. And I felt like I had gotten out of my P&G experience what I wanted and had the chance to work in the joint venture with Clorox for 2 years, and then had started to have conversations with my P&G manager at the time about coming back. And I said, you know, I really don't want to. And the biggest reason was that at Clorox, you know, I found an environment that was just perfect for me. I think one of the things as people are looking for to grow their careers and looking at career opportunities, it really does matter to honestly look at yourself and say, what am I good at and what do I love and what brings me joy and what gives me excitement every single day. I think the job number one is to have a thorough assessment of what is it you want and then go find that place so that you don't leave from a place, but you leave towards a place that you really, really love. And those are two separate concepts. And I found a place I love and haven't regretted since.
So I have to admit that I love this as a thought, but I'm curious, just a quick sense check from you, Roman. Do you think enjoying what you do at work is necessary or important?
I do, because then it's not work. I feel like we've all heard that at this point. Not every day is going to be fun. It's not going to be great. But if you really believe and love with the thing you're doing, you'll go through fire for it. So some days it's going to be work. Some days it's going to be fun. But if you fundamentally believe in what you're doing, it's all good.
Well, and I think that's actually a leadership tactic. That's not just a Zen principle or kumbaya type focus, but it's actually good leadership. And that's something that Bracken Darrell, the CEO of Logitech, shared with us. And that's what he really emphasized early on, was this idea of leadership, particularly when people don't necessarily have to do what you say.
My first time really running a team, I probably was at B&G or something, and a light went on for me. It was like these lights that go on during your life. A light went on for me bright and clear. It was like, holy cow, you know what? I had to inspire people in high school to try to get them to do things. And it's actually the same way today. I have to inspire them exactly the same way. You're always running an all-volunteer army. You just don't know it, because they can vote with their feet and just walk right out the door if they don't feel inspired and appreciated and feel like they're making a difference. I'd say the lesson came over time, but it took me 10 years to learn that lesson, that you're always running an all-volunteer army.
This idea of a volunteer army, the idea of convincing people rather than commanding them, it's just a powerful approach.
And one way to do that well is through humor and levity, which I certainly believe in, but I was very happy to hear Bracken say that.
I have so much fun at work. I mean, I have to say, on a good day, I feel like I'm laughing my way through the day. On a bad day, laughing my way through most of the day. I just think life's too short and everybody loves to laugh and there's always something to laugh at. And usually it's laughing at me, or my latest thing to laugh at is my lovable CFO, who wears a sweater like Mr. Rogers and keeps his HP12C within 4 inches of his hand all the time, just in case. We just have so much fun. And I think when you laugh all the time, you're less afraid to make mistakes or to say something stupid, because you can laugh it off. It lowers the bar for saying anything. And I think there's two kinds of bars you want to lower: the bar for feeling like you said something stupid, and the bar for feeling like you said something that's going to hurt somebody else's feelings. So candor on the one hand and freedom to speak on the other one without being criticized. If you can get both of those in place, and I'm probably better at the laughing one than the candor one, well, you really got magic in your culture. I really try to laugh a lot. It's a lot of effort, but I try. And I try to laugh a lot in meetings, whether they're video meetings like they are mostly now, or in-person meetings. And I really encourage other people, because there's no substitute for making the day more fun.
I think the first starting point is just recognizing humor not as a frivolous thing, but just how important that is. And that's something that Bracken talked about. It's something that Benno's talked about before. A number of different leaders have just talked about that idea of bringing your full self to work, of which your sense of humor and this ability to laugh and smile a little bit more is an important component of it. So I think it's just being intentional.
Oh, man. You know, I feel like I just got a lot of learnings.
How is that still not an actual word in the dictionary?
We're making it one episode at a time, one guest at a time.
And as always, these episodes barely scratch the surface of some amazing conversations we've had on this podcast. So we'd highly recommend you go back and check out the earlier full-length conversations with some of the guests you've heard from.
So who are you going to hear from next week?
Next week, we'll be revisiting our conversations with some retired industry giants, people who were CEOs at some of the world's greatest companies like Unilever, Chiquita, Popeyes, eBay, HP, Quibi, Boeing, 3M, and Dun & Bradstreet. Many of these guests are now sitting on corporate boards, chairing new nonprofits and NGOs, and some even own professional sports teams.
Awesome. I can't wait to get some more learnings from leaders.
Way to plug the show. And that's our show. Like what you heard? Please subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform. For show notes about this episode, links to things mentioned, or requests for sponsorship, visit pgalums.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at pgalumpod. We'd love to hear from you.
Learnings from Leaders is a production of the P&G Alumni Network, a global nonprofit founded by former P&Gers committed to community, enrichment, and philanthropy. With more than 45,000 registered members worldwide, the network connects alums through global conferences, local chapters, industry events, and online content. Our nonprofit foundation supports economic empowerment communities around the world. To find out more, visit pgalums.com.
That's it for this week. I've been Roman Segal.
And I'm still Andrew Tarvin. Thanks for joining Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. We'll see you next time.